It's Chris McGinnis.
Quiet, please.
Ladies and gentlemen,
you ready for the big show?
You're
in exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
And then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome to Monday. And in fact, on a Monday, I thought I'd start with the poll on X today. Are free vasectomies for all American Democrats really a bad idea? And if you say, Lars, where did that crazy question come from? Well, the fact is, at the Democrat convention, the DNC convention, they're actually offering free vasectomies for all Democrats. Almost sounds like the Republicans sneaked in there. They're also offering free abortion pills. So Planned Parenthood has arrived at the DNC convention offering not just to kill babies, but kill all those tiny swimmers as well. I don't think it sounds like a bad idea on the vasectomies. Now, the abortion bills, I don't like that idea. But free vasectomies for everybody with the Democrat Party, not a bad idea at the end of the day. Probably cut down on America's troubles dramatically. Welcome to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. You can find that poll on X at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Always brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Now, I want to start with this question, though. And it has to do with why one of the most populous counties in the Pacific Northwest is now ignoring not just the legislature, but ignoring the will of the voters as well. As you may know, both Oregon and Washington have had massive problems with drug overdoses. Literally, thousands of people dead from overdoses in the state of Washington, thousands of people dead from drug overdoses in the state of Oregon in just the last 2 years. So, what did the legislature do about it? Well, they passed a bill, and they said, we're going to recriminalize hard drugs, but we're going to do it through what we call deflection. In other words, they had to invent something brand new. And what is deflection exactly? I mean, even if you ask the state lawmaker types in Salem in this case, they're not exactly sure because they just invented it. And what they really want to do is do effectively nothing about a problem that is currently killing thousands of people every year. Now, that doesn't make sense, but then again, it's a state run by a Democrat House, a Democrat Senate, a Democrat governor, and all the other important statewide officials are elected Democrats. So what happens when they then say, why, we would like you to provide treatment availability to all the people who get caught with hard drugs? I'm going to give you the details on this. It is a colossal train wreck in the making. It is virtually guaranteeing that in the next 12 months, you're going to see at least 1,000 people die of drug overdoses if the number doesn't go above and beyond all that. But let me get to that in just a moment. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. It is honestly provocative talk for the Pacific Northwest on our Radio Northwest Network, going out to Oregon, Washington, and Idaho, and served by a network of 26 radio stations. I'm glad to have you with me. If you want to jump into the conversation, we make that easy. 866-HEY-LARS. And if you happen to be a naysayer, in other words, you think it's great that people who are addicted to drugs will have essentially nothing done for them, except we're going to spend literally hundreds of millions of dollars to provide that nothing. So it's going to mean a lot of good 5- and 6-figure job opportunities for a lot of people who like to work for the government. If you like the idea of your taxpayer money being wasted that way without saving the lives of that roughly 1,000 or more people who are going to die in the next 12 months in Oregon, I know Washington, another problem, but they have similar problems as well. And you're going to love to be a naysayer. You're going to want to say, Lars, this is one of the best ideas I've ever heard. I mean, they're not solving a problem. They're spending a massive amount of taxpayer money. People are going to die anyway, and effectively, nothing is going to change. If that's the kind of solution you like to see from the government, we've got it right now. And if you're a naysayer, we'll put you to the head of the line at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And you can answer the poll on X. Are free vasectomies for all American Democrats necessarily a bad idea? I'd say nope. Sounds like a good idea to me. You can find the poll on X at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Now, on First Amendment Friday last week, we ended the week with this question out of Redmond, Washington, where the local police are using flying drones as immediate first responders to get eyes on the scene faster. I saw it. I tried as hard as I could to think of any idea why that was a bad idea. I couldn't find a reason it was a bad idea. So I said yes. And 79% of you said yes as well. But 22% of you said no. That's a bad idea. And I'd love to talk to those naysayers. What is it exactly that would be bad about giving either fire or police eyes on the scene of a disaster that's unfolding where help has been called for? It'll be there in minutes, maybe tens of minutes, depending on the response time and 911 and things like that. But would it be a bad idea to let the police or fire get eyes on a situation early, decide if you need more resources, fewer resources? All of that sounds like a good idea to me. 79% of you agreed. About 22% of you said you did not agree. But let me get back to deflection, because here's where Multnomah County, the single most populous county in the state of Oregon, one of the two most populous counties in the Pacific Northwest. And in that county, what does Multnomah County plan to do with people who are addicted to drugs and might be the next ones to die of drug overdose? The short answer is not much of anything. And in fact, they're not just ignoring what the legislature intended for them to do, but they are ignoring the will of the voters, because the voters had this joker of a district attorney. He's still sitting in office. He'll be there till January. But even the voters in a very liberal county like Multnomah County said, we got to get rid of Mike Schmidt for brains, because he has screwed things up. He refuses to prosecute real criminals. The city has become much more dangerous, and a lot of people are ending up dead. So the voters said, you, Schmidt for brains, you hit the bricks. We're going to replace you with DA Nathan Vasquez. And what does Vasquez say about this plan from Multnomah County? Number one, they didn't bother to talk to him, even though they were designing the plan after the voters had already said Vasquez, come January, is going to replace Schmidt for brains. So you'd think they'd want to pay attention to what he's saying. He says, people will not be, this is from a spokesman for Multnomah County, people will be appropriate for deflection if they are deemed eligible by law enforcement, but if they are not in immediate need of urgent or immediate medical care, if somebody is too intoxicated to consent, then they are not appropriate for the deflection center. So the legislature says, here's a giant pile of money. I think it's $20 million to begin with. Go ahead and set up the deflection center. And they're saying, well, that's great. But if somebody comes to the deflection center brought there by the police and they are high on drugs, then they're not appropriate for the deflection center. I guess the only time that the deflection center does you any good as a drug addict is if you arrive at the deflection center stone cold sober. They aren't even going to have a sobering center until, well, maybe sometime next year. Now, does that sound like county officials who are ignoring not only the will of the voters, but the legislature as well? It's a Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and you're listening to the Lars Larson Show. You've heard me.
The work so you don't have to. Bringing the political heat. He's Lars Larson.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to say.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense? news.
That great moment every day where Lars brings you the cold, hard facts without any liberal wokeness from the Daily Dead fish wrapper or mainstream media bias.
Oh, the political types want you to think of this week's Democrat convention in Chicago as something new and different. It's not. Even as it features the coronation of Kamala, the candidate, who ought to come with a warning sticker, no voters were consulted in this choice. No, this kind of backroom deal has become standard operating procedure for the party of slavery. Consider the history of coups in the recent years. 8 years ago, Hillary Clinton nearly lost the nomination to Bernie Sanders. Well, the DNC hierarchy couldn't tolerate that, so they cheated the commie from Vermont. They managed to pay him off, so he went away quietly. Monica Lewinsky's ex-boyfriend's wife got the nomination instead, and she went on to lose to Donald Trump. That was good news for America. 4 years ago, the DNC watched Joe Biden lose his first three primary elections, but the fix was in. All of a sudden, Joe's three primary challengers mysteriously dropped out almost simultaneously in the month of March, and the demented Delawarean got the nod. Less than a month ago, Joe insisted he was absolutely positively seeking re-election. That was literally 29 days ago, till his own party came to him privately and threatened to drag him out of the Oval Office with the 25th Amendment. That would have been embarrassing, so he caved in. The same party threw out the primary votes of 14 million American Democrats, and they crowned Kamala. And now in Chicago, a very public sham is going to cement that backroom deal. Like I said, this week's Democrat convention ain't very Democratic at all, and it's going on behind a big metal wall around that convention center that would make Donald Trump proud. Glad to get to your calls in a moment at 866-HEY-LARS. Send emails to talk@LarsLarson.com. And our question of the day, given everything I've just told you, why does the Democrat National Convention mention Joe Biden's second term in office 19 different times in the party platform they just released? It is unbelievable that they actually refer to Joe Biden's second term 19 times. Kamala's presidency would be a Biden second term, only just a bit more radical. A continuation of his broken economy, the broken border, and a broken world. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now.
I'm going to give today's Daily Grill to Tina Kotek, now rated as of this week as the number one least popular governor in all of America. That's all 50 states for those of us who are Americans, 58 if you're a fan of Obama. The 2024 Morning Consult poll of all 50 state governors, once again, places Oregon Governor Tina Kotek at the bottom. The governor got about 45% approval, which makes her the least approved and the least liked governor in all of the United States, even as rated by the governor's own colleagues. Today's best email of the day, but you can always send more to talk@LarsLarson.com. This one comes from Chris. Lars, I've been hoping to call in, but I haven't had time while working three jobs to pay to live in this economy. My single income of 90 grand plus commissions still leaves my family pulling from savings many months because my wife's job was taken during these layoffs. I wanted to ask if you had any information about lawsuits that could result because of the mass layoffs that happened when healthcare workers chose to pass on getting the ill-named vaccine in order to stay employed. I needed to do some digging, but isn't there a legislature in the state of Oregon that says employers, especially healthcare workers, are not able to mandate what vaccines they choose to get? Have a great day, signed Chris. Well, Chris, I reached out to one of the lawyers I know best, Michael Fuller. He calls himself the underdog lawyer. He said there was some discussion of lawsuits, but they decided there was not a case to be made there. And so, hence, the lawsuits have not happened. In a couple of years, you are going to see the result of that, because we'll be past the statute of limitations, and that will be the end of it. One other thing I want to mention. There is jury selection going on this week in Seattle. The lawsuit is by the family of a young lady who died by the name of Summer Taylor. I feel sorry that her family lost Summer Taylor, but she was part of a group of Black Lives Matter demonstrators who took to Interstate 5 Now, was that a great idea? No, it was not a great idea. There was a crazy man who's already taken a plea deal. His name is Dawit Khalid. He agreed to a plea deal about a year ago. He pleaded guilty to vehicular homicide, vehicular assault, and reckless driving. He was on opioids at the time he hit Summer Taylor. She was killed. Another person was hurt badly. But now her family has decided it is the fault of the state of Washington. So understand this. She's on an interstate freeway as part of a group of demonstrators. There's a guy who gets onto the freeway who's high on opioids, but somehow it is the state of Washington's fault, and her family wants a paycheck from this jury. I hope they do not. I feel for their loss. They do not deserve to be compensated by the people of Washington State. Let's start with a naysayer, and that's Greg. Hey, Greg, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, I'm just calling about your quick poll regarding giving drones for quick access to crime scenes and whatnot. In principle, I'm not opposed to the idea of first responders being able to get eyes on scene quickly, but my problem is if you give the government an inch, they're going to take a mile. And in my experiences in the past, what's to stop them eventually from using it for surveillance and other things like that?
Nothing except... if you say to these agencies, you are allowed to use this as first responder, if you start using it for surveillance and invading people's rights without a court order, you know, without a warrant to show that there's probable cause to believe that a crime's been committed, you can go after that. And my suggestion would be allow them to use them as first responders. That means you get eyes on the scene quickly. So I last week I used the example, you get word that a stop and rob, a 7-Eleven or a Plaid is being robbed, and you say, okay, let's get the drone out there quick. It'll be there in, 2 minutes. Police cars may take 10 by the time you get them dispatched and everything else. If that drone gets over the scene and gets pictures of the bad guys and gets pictures of the vehicle they're using to leave the scene and gets the direction of travel and maybe even follows the bad guys, then maybe you catch the bad guys faster. You say, but this is all you're allowed to use them for. And I will point out, police agencies, even in Seattle, there was a great example a few years ago where they said, yes, you can have red light cameras, including video for those cameras, but no, you're not allowed to use the red light video for anything except red light tickets. They literally had a murder that they could have solved with the video they possessed that came from a red light video camera. And they said, but you can't touch it. You can't look at it for solving that murder. Now, I thought that was stupid at the time, but there's an example where they said, we will stick to the rules. If we're allowed only to use the video to write red light tickets, then that's all we'll use it for. And I would hope that every police agency would have to document at some level the amount of use of drones and what they use them for. If they say, we're just checking people out and trying to keep an eye on people, then you slap them down hard. If they're using them to get eyes on an emergency and decide, you know, what to do and how many more resources you need, I think it's a good way to use them. It's Monday, and it's the Radio Northwest.
The Lars Larson Show. Portland's... small town politics with big town opinions. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. And the Democrats are getting ready for their big shindig. No big decisions to make. They've already chosen their presidential candidate without involving the voters or delegates or anything like that. They've already chosen a vice presidential candidate, again, without any input from the voters. But the man on the scene for us is Zach Wildfang, the man whose name comes from a Hollywood casting directing operation, I think, because it's a cool name. But Zach is with our Seattle affiliate, KVI. Zach, how are you?
Well, I'm doing well, Lars. I wish my faith lived up to that intro that you gave, but unfortunately, I'm stuck here on the radio. But I am here on the scene in Chicago, down in Media Row right now.
Okay, so what's it like so far? Because there are a lot of things I want to ask you about, but I want to know what does it feel like in Chicago, I guess, is the best way to ask you, because you've got all these delegates and all these people who have shown up to make a choice that was made weeks ago.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's kind of a tale of two Chicagos in a way. Certainly the atmosphere within the convention center is there's a lot of excitement. It's very fun. I mean, the music, we watched the sound check for the delegation roll call yesterday, and there's going to be a live DJ in full bucket hat and sweatsuit on stage. It's very different than what we saw in Milwaukee. But then we're talking to locals and some of our Uber drivers around the city, and they're nervous. They're anxious. There's this looming threat of protest and what's no longer a threat, what's happening outside. So, you know, very, very different atmosphere inside the convention center and outside.
Well, by the way, about those protests, does it seem likely at this point that the protest by the extreme left end of the Democrat Party is going to distract from the convention going on inside, or at least as delegates go to and from the center?
We'll see how much that distracts from what goes on inside. Speaking from our own experience, going to and from the hotel near where the Washington State delegation is staying, we have not encountered any of that, but it's certainly going on. You can see it on the video, and it's certainly distracting the local news coverage. We've been watching some of the local news coverage going on TV in Chicago, and that's dominating most of that news cycle is safety and security and how folks just go about their day-to-day lives. One of our Uber drivers lives, he just said, 3 blocks from the mayor, and he's having a difficult time getting to and from his own home because they've roped off about a couple blocks around the mayor's house, worried that protests might erupt there. So that seems to be the attitude of the citizens of Chicago right now.
Well, the other thing, I'm talking to Zach Wildfang from our affiliate station, KVI, but what seems odd to me is usually when there's a protest, it's people from the other side of the aisle. You know, if you have a Republican gathering, then it's people from the Democrats who are protesting outside. In this case, it's Democrats protesting other Democrats. Is that right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I'd say there's an extra aisle even further to the left. These aren't Democrats protesting Democrats. These seem to be socialists protesting Democrats. We had some video from Jonathan Cho, who's down here as well, journalist for Turning Point and Discovery Institute, and he ran into former Seattle City Councilwoman Kashama Sawant is out there being a part of these demonstrations here in Chicago. So it's not exactly Democrats, I would say, out there protesting the DNC.
Although I'd have to say last week Kamala Harris did her part by announcing a fully socialist program that she plans to invoke on America if she gets the chance. I mean, she's all for wage and price controls and everything else. But the thing that protects the convention, I know, Zach, and you know this too, that the Democrats say walls don't work and they oppose walls on America's southern border. Would you mind describing what is currently protecting the Democrat convention from its far left wing outside?
Well, I don't know if walls work, but barricades certainly do. There's about multiple layers of 8 foot tall metal barricades that surround not only the perimeter here of United Arena where the Bulls play, there's also similar barricades out and around the city. Some private companies have hired people to come protect their businesses, but as well, you have the McCormick Center, or McCormick Place, rather, their big convention center here in Chicago, and that's also protected. So you have these barricades and security perimeters. There's vehicle perimeters that you have to have your car searched before you can enter, and then there's pedestrian perimeters if you want to even make it outside of the building, and usually an additional search to make it inside one of these buildings as well, similar to TSA. But there sure seems to be a whole lot of walls and border security, if you ask me.
I guess I'm just curious whether the Democrats have thought about the intentional or unintentional irony that if we had the level of security on our southern border and maybe on our northern border, because that's becoming a problem too, that they have around the Democrat Party convention, that we wouldn't have a problem with, you know, 10 million illegal aliens as of today.
Well, I see a lot of dreamers out there just looking to get inside this border. So I say we do the compassionate thing and let them inside and let their voice be heard, Lars.
The other thing I wanted to ask you about, Zach, I'm sure you've seen the story because I saw it early this morning. Planned Parenthood, which, of course, the Democrats love Planned Parenthood because they're all about killing babies. But Planned Parenthood has a presence and they're offering up freebies. Have you heard about that?
I've heard about that. I've yet to see it in person, but I have heard that there's a sort of mobile taco truck, if you will, offering vasectomies and abortions. I've seen some footage of demonstrators dressed as abortion pills. I've heard there's a very large IUD.
Walking replica. Around a walking IUD?
It would seem, yes.
OK. Okay. They know how to throw a party, don't they? I guess I just wondered, because I actually made it today's, we do a poll question every day on X, and I said, if you're proposing that every Democrat in America should get a free vasectomy, I'm completely in favor of that. Now, the abortion pills, I oppose that. But if you want to vasectomize Democrats so they can't reproduce in America, I don't think that's necessarily the worst idea in the world.
No, I'd have to concur with you there.
All right, other things you've noticed, anything stand out in the last, I know you've been on the ground a short time, but what else stands out at the Democrat convention? And are any of the delegates wandering around saying, I wonder who we're going to pick when we have that big roll call? I mean, are any of them expressing frustration that the choice was made weeks ago?
There's very few delegates in the building yet. I've been anxiously waiting to ask them that. But yesterday when we got in early to set up our gear, I got an opportunity to walk around just by myself. And I noticed a couple things that were different from the RNC, which I had the good fortune to go to last month. There's this ADA ramp that takes up about a third of the floor. Like I said, it's where the bowls play out here. So this ADA ramp is about 7 switchbacks that extends past the 3-point line. And I just have to imagine that there's a couple elevators in this arena to get you from wherever you need to go up to the ground level. And I know this exists because I've taken one myself. So it seems to be this big display of look at how accessible this is. There's a social media content creators platform that takes up a good chunk of the floor, which grinds my gears as a member of the media because they have their own lounge and the special access, and the actual press is having a difficult time getting around. And then the other thing that was one of my highlights from today, they have these 3 prayer rooms. They have a men's prayer room, a women's prayer room, and would you like to take a guess at the third, Lars?
A pronoun prayer room or a Muslim prayer room?
It is a gender-neutral prayer room.
So, you know, you have to go in there only if you've already had the vasectomy and maybe a little bit more, and then you're gender neutral. You're Barbie or Ken, and then you can use that. I mean, this is the weirdness of the Democrat Party.
Yeah, I mean, and everything is so specific. There's a sensory room if you need to get away from the lights for a little bit. There's a quiet room. I think they spent more money printing up signs, and they're going to run out of rooms here pretty quick.
Okay, last thing to check, if you haven't already checked this, Zach, because we have Tim Walz on the ticket with Kamala Harris, I want you to make sure you check and see if there are tampons in the boys' room. Because Tim, that's part of his platform. He wants to make sure there are tampons in the boys' room. Can you check and see whether that's the case and whether they've actually accommodated everybody of every gender and every sexual persuasion? That's Zach Wildfang from our affiliate station in Seattle, KVI. Back in just a moment. It's Monday, and you're listening to The Lars Larson Show.
Unwrapping the news so you don't have to. Back to the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you. It's a Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network, and it's my pleasure to be with you. And if you want to join the best conversation in talk journalism, it happens right here every day on the Radio Northwest Network. 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer, straight to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. This segment comes from 540training.com. Concealed carry, home invasion defense, and personal defense. Find them online at 540training.com. Our question today, are free vasectomies for all American Democrats a bad idea? The Planned Parenthood group, you know, the one that specializes in killing babies. Well, they're not just killing babies. At the DNC convention, they are offering free abortions. I'm not even kidding a little bit. And they are also offering free vasectomies. I assume they're not discriminating based on party, but the ones they're going to most come in contact with are members of the Democrat Party. They are offering free vasectomies to all those attending the Democrat National Convention this week. They even have a mobile truck running around offering those services. Are free vasectomies for all Democrats a bad idea? I said, nope. Sounds like a good idea to me. Today's X poll can be found at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com. Brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Let's start with Danny. Hey, Danny, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Well, Lars, I wanted to address the fentanyl situation that you talked about earlier.
Yes, sir.
I won't go through all the details because it's long, but I have a 21-year-old daughter that lives in Okanagan County by Tenasket in that area.
Yep.
And she got herself in a little trouble, a misdemeanor, and ended up going to county jail. And through investigations and everything over the last 9 months, they dropped the charges and told her that she was going to be out within about, she had done time served for this issue that she had.
Yep.
And so I talked to her about 4 days before she was supposed to get out of the county. And it was exactly 4 days. I get a call from my father-in-law at 6:30 in the morning that my granddaughter just died in county. And no one knew why, other than they told my daughter-in-law that they saw her kind of collapse with these cameras in an all-girls county jail.
Yep.
And they went to her,
and the
correctional officer, the first one that met her, gave her Narcan. I said, gave her Narcan? For what reason? Well, to fast forward, I ended up doing some investigating myself, and my daughter-in-law and my family up there was kind of, we're all like in shock. And so I ended up calling the county coroner's office and trying to get a hold of somebody, explain I'm the grandfather. And I ended up talking to one of the coroners. He called me back. He was really nice to talk to on the phone. He says, hey, Danny, we won't know until we get a toxicology report back, and they're going to do an autopsy. But I said, why did they give her Narcan? And he said, well, it's kind of a long story. I can't really say too much about it. Well, I'm going to fast forward to the place where, after everything came back, she died of fentanyl poisoning in the custody of the state. And my daughter-in-law has an attorney right now that they're doing everything they can. And the state doesn't want to take responsibility for this thing. So in the last month, they tried to pin it on one of the other girls that was there that said they don't know if she took it voluntarily or if the girl...
And see, I was going to ask you about that, whether there was any indication that she had Narcan, or not Narcan, but fentanyl forced on her. Is there any indication, or did she take it?
See, that's the part, Lars, that they're actually investigating, but... Through other people that I've talked to, and I have some friends that they worked in a maximum state prison over in Boise,
yeah.
And they told me that some of the laws right now, I mean, well, basically, you know, nobody's going to rat out anybody else, but those drugs
right.
got into that jail with somebody, and then and they said the state will not. They want to try to close this case as fast as they can. So here you're in jail and you die of fentanyl, and so it's been a real challenge to our
family.
Well,
you're in somebody else's custody, so they're responsible for your medical care. But if an inmate voluntarily took fentanyl and overdosed, then
yeah.
I can't blame anybody but the person who voluntarily took it. If it, somehow it was forced on her, then that would be a different matter. But you'd have
okay,
to prove
yeah.
that it was forced on her, wouldn't you?
I would think so, but what I'm saying is, how did it get in there in the first place?
Oh, you know, the problem is all of those institutions leak contraband like crazy. And the thing is, contraband gets inside of jails all the time, and
okay.
I think they could stop it. My belief is they could stop it. And number one, they could say, if you ever are caught involving, you know, if you're a staff member and you bring fentanyl or any other contraband in, weed, you know, contraband phones, contraband anything,
yeah.
you're fired and we will prosecute you. But I don't,
exactly.
I can't remember the last time I heard about a corrections officer. I mean, there are a few that are prosecuted for having sex with inmates. You know,
right.
and there again, you've got the question, was it voluntary? Well, if you're in custody, you know, and the corrections officer is offering you things in exchange for sex, and it happens, believe it or not, involving both men corrections officers and women. That,
right,
that
I've heard that.
You know, I don't think there is such a thing as voluntary if you're behind bars. I'm not being sympathetic to criminals. I'm just saying if you're behind bars and the corrections officer said you can, you know, I can make your life very difficult or you can have sex, whether it's a man or woman, then there's not much. But let me know as you find out more. If it was forced on her, you literally could bring a charge, I would think, of
the Lars Larson Show.
You ready for the big show?
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Lars. This is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
Then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Monday, and the Democrats are meeting in Chicago. Will it be as troubled as the one was in 1968 or the old, dull, boring affair that Josh Markey, longtime friend of the show, personal friend of mine, but was a Democrat delegate during the very dull one that was held in Chicago about a third of a century, not quite a third of a century, more than a quarter of a century before. Hey, Josh, welcome back to the program.
Thank you. And times have changed.
I guess I just wonder what this is all about, because all these delegates are showing up in Chicago to make a choice that was made literally weeks ago, and they had absolutely no hand in it, nor did any of the registered Democrats in the United States.
Well, I would be really disappointed. I mean, although what I attended, and I had no illusions in 1996, I was selected by the Democratic Party of Oregon quite bluntly because they had a, even back then, almost 30 years ago, they had a quota. They needed a certain number of,
but of course,
gays, a certain number of straights. and I was the, token white, straight, rural male at the time. They actually were running out of, they didn't have their quota. So they offered me what was what sometimes referred to as a superdelegate position, meaning that, but in 1996, it was, as you know, not very interesting because it was a incumbent president running for reelection and there wasn't even the pretense. This was supposed to be an open convention, which would have been really fascinating, but the Democratic Party has decided apparently that, and apparently the Oregon delegates went along with this because they've all basically decided to salute in unison rather than have, I mean, I'm still a Democrat and I still think it would be interesting to have a real discussion about, and maybe they'll end up, you know, still, they would still have ended up nominating probably Kamala Harris, but you know, it just, it isn't
you're
the same
right.
thing.
Now, hold I want to challenge that notion. This woman is a terrible candidate. She barely made it out in her race for attorney general. She then slides into a U.S. Senate seat because I guess she was the heir apparent for that. And then she gets bumped out of the presidential race before a single vote has been cast. She's out of the running, can't even maintain her campaign. And she gets picked by Joe Biden based on her gender and her skin color, and she's the affirmative action choice of Joe Biden, and now she's the hopes and dreams of the Democrat Party. Is the party that you are still a member of really that pathetic?
Apparently so. I mean, yes, you're right that Biden did make it clear that his vice presidential candidate absolutely had to be, I think, a certain color and I think a certain gender. So the field was very, very limited. And I think he expected probably not to see his cognitive decline as rapid as it has been, and expected, and I think still expected as little as a couple months ago, that he was going to be the candidate. Obviously, that became clear it wasn't going to be. I suspect that he and his immediate supporters are quite bitter about that. But you're right. I mean, Harris, when she ran as a candidate in the primaries in 2020, she said horrible things about Joe Biden. She accused him of being a racist for votes that
well,
he made in support of crime bills in the 1960s.
Well, but he is a racist. I mean, do you understand why she called him a racist? Is because he's the guy who said, if you work at a 7-Eleven, you have to have an Indian accent. And he's the guy who wrote a letter saying, you can't desegregate the schools. If you do, my kids, who are white, would have to go to a jungle school. And he was good buddies with a number of people like Robert Byrd and others, former Klan leader. Is there any doubt in your mind that Joe Biden is an unrepentant racist, even at this late date?
No, I don't think he's an unrepentant racist. And I think he made choices that a lot of people in the Democratic Party made. They made deals with the devil, whether it was Robert Byrd, who was a former Klan member, or frankly, other members of the Democratic Party who, you know, ended up becoming Republicans. I am no more enthusiastic, as you know, about the choice of either party for president. I just think that the Democratic Party, or the Democrat Party as you call it, could aspire to do a lot better, and they could have had a real convention and really, I don't know who would have won. I kind of doubt if it had been a really open race, it would have been Kamala Harris, though.
But Josh, if they had had an open convention, Ashley behaved in a Democrat-ic fashion. You know, by saying, let's actually see what the people's representatives, let's take into account those 14 million votes cast by American Democrats. Let's take some of that into account. Nah, we don't need to do that. The party leadership will simply choose the candidate. They would have had to behave in a Democrat-ic way, and they weren't going to do that, were they?
Well, neither party has done that for a while. It's disappointing. I mean, ironically, the last time it really happened, and it was...
Hold on. Donald Trump did not secure the majority of delegates, the majority of votes and the majority of delegates in the primaries and win the nomination fair and square?
No, but I think going into the GOP primary, into the convention, there was never any question. It was just a coronation of Donald Trump. You've got to admit that. I mean,
well, I admit it because he got the greatest number of votes. I mean, he had people run against him, whereas the Democrats decided we're not going to have Bernie back in 2016. They kicked him to the curb and cheated him even out of an opportunity to the nomination and gave it to Hillary because that's what the party leadership decided. And then when Joe, in March of 2020, all of a sudden his three competitors, all of whom had won primaries, and he hadn't won a single one three primaries in, and they said, nope. They've all decided to drop out mysteriously at the same time in 1 month and let Joe just have it. You're telling me that wasn't engineered? And now this is engineered
hold on.
Josh, 1 month ago today, Joe Biden was vowing, I am running for re-election. I'm excited to get out on the campaign trail. 1 month ago today. And then 1 month minus a couple of days ago, or plus a couple of days, Joe Biden is suddenly out on his ear.
Yeah, well, I think we all saw how he did in a debate with Donald Trump, and it was pathetic. It was horrible. And there's no way the Democratic Party was going to allow him to be their standard bearer. Now, that doesn't mean that it had to be the vice president. And then, you know, what we haven't seen yet is there haven't been any debates. And as you and other people have pointed out, Kamala has been running really a stealth campaign. Even the New York Times, which heavily backs her, has been making the point that, you know, when is she going to actually talk about substantive stuff? I mean, you know, there are legitimate questions like, are you for fracking or are you against it?
Nobody knows.
Are you tough on crime, are you camel of the cop
or camel of the killer? Because they've been calling him Genocide Joe because of Israel. Now it's going to be camel of the killer, you know, because of her position on Israel. And she can't figure out, do I really want Michigan and Dearborn or do I want the votes of everybody else in the country?
Well, I think that's the idea that could be really short-sighted to say, hey, there are Arab Americans in Dearborn, Michigan, which there are, and I need to make them. I think, by and large, support for Israel really is across the board in most of America.
Except the Democrat Party. That's Josh Markey, former Democrat delegate, and you've got the Lars.
Do you
realize you can literally have Lars with you all day, every day. Podcasts at Spotify, Apple, SoundCloud, and live right now. What a time to be alive. Here's Lars.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. I want you to consider this question seriously. Has Joe Biden committed impeachable offenses that netted the Biden crime family literally tens of millions of dollars? And if so, does he merit impeachment? And if he has not committed those crimes, will the Democrats step forward to actually defend him in this case? It's a question that I think you should consider, especially because House Republicans today published a 300-page report that shows lengthy evidence that indicates President Joe Biden is guilty of impeachable offenses that involve about $35 million in foreign pay-to-play that was obtained by his son and his brother, and that it all flowed back to the Biden crime family. Let me get into the details of that in just a moment. First, welcome to the program. Glad to have you on board on this Monday. Always glad to take your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Send your emails to talk at LarsLarson.com. If you're a naysayer, we're going to put you right to the head of the line at 866-439-5277. And our X poll today, since the DNC convention is going on in Chicago, are free vasectomies for all Democrats necessarily a bad idea? I would say no to that. I think it sounds like a perfectly good idea because, you see, at the DNC convention, they're such good friends of Planned Parenthood that Planned Parenthood literally has a mobile van that is driving around the streets of Chicago, around where the Democrat National Convention is being held. They announced in an X post that the DNC will offer free services like vasectomies and free abortion pills. I mean, literally, this is the kind of garbage that the Democrat Party supports. So, forget about the abortion pills. That's an exceptionally terrible idea. But are free vasectomies for all Democrats a good idea? I'd have to say yes to that. Somebody actually wrote to me and suggested lobotomies, but I said, well, how would you know the difference between a lobotomized Democrat and an unlobotomized Democrat? You can find today's poll on X at Lars Larson Show, and that's on X. You can also find it on our website at LarsLarson.com. Now, on Friday, First Amendment Friday, we ask you this question. Should police use drones as first responders to get eyes on the scene during a 911 emergency and get those eyes on the scene faster? I answered yes. 79% of you said yes to that question, but a rather surprising 22% of you said no, that's a bad idea. I've kind of been anticipating the naysayer calls today on that. I think it's a great idea. But before we do anything more on that, let's get back to the Biden crime family. When you ask Joe Biden about the events that have included his family, events like money that came from communist China to Hunter Biden and his business partners, money that came from Kazakhstan to Hunter Biden and his business partners, money that was paid directly to Hunter Biden during Joe Biden's vice presidency when Hunter Biden served on the board of directors of a Ukrainian company owned by a corrupt oligarch called Burisma, you'll hear Joe Biden simply say he denied it. I mean, in the debate he had with Donald Trump 4 years ago, Trump said directly, your family and you have made money from China. And Joe Biden on that debate stage, and you couldn't exactly blame his mental failings at that point, he denied it flat out. He said, my family has not made money in China. I have not made money in China. Well, now we know that that's entirely untrue. But take a listen to some of the responses that Joe Biden has given over the years to any suggestion that the Biden crime family was benefiting from Joe Biden's time in office.
Nothing was unethical.
There's been no indication of any conflict of interest from Ukraine or anywhere else. Period.
I don't know what he was doing. I know he was on the board. I found out he was on the board after he was on the board. And that was it.
I've never spoken to my son about drugs.
I've never discussed my business or their business, my sons or daughters, and I've never discussed them.
Did you and your father ever discuss Ukraine?
No.
Now, I think all of those are flat out lies. I mean, after all, if you ask a criminal, Have you been engaged in criminal activity? Of course they're going to tell you no, they have not. So what is in that 300-page report that was published just today by House Republicans on the Oversight, Judiciary, and Ways and Means Committees? They released a joint report following a one-year impeachment inquiry. And the conclusion of that investigation, first and foremost, the overwhelming evidence demonstrates that President Biden participated in a conspiracy to monetize his office. This was his vice presidential office of public trust to enrich his family. The report also says that since he's president now, his family and their associates capitalized on Joe Biden's occupation of high public offices, the vice presidency in particular, to rake in about $27 million from foreign individuals and foreign companies, and that was going all the way back to 2014, that they can prove. And that they brought the money in through shell corporations designed to, according to the report, conceal those payments from scrutiny. The money came primarily from foreign companies and foreign individuals, including Russia, Ukraine, Kazakhstan, China, Romania, and Panama. Now, on top of the $27 million, there were $8 million in alleged loans that were made to Hunter Biden and James Biden from Democrat benefactors. But remember, when you loan somebody money, but you don't have any expectation that you'll get it paid back, what you've really done is given them $8 million. The total is $35 million. And again, according to the report, quote, sent to Biden family members, their companies, and their business associates in the last 11 years, for which, again, according to the report, there were no legitimate services that were found to justify such lucrative payments. In other words, if somebody wanted to launder some money into your pocket, no matter what business you work in, if you simply say, well, he hired me as a consultant, or he hired me as an accountant, or in the case of Hunter Biden, since he was and is a member of the bar, you could say they hired Hunter Biden as a lawyer. And then you say, well, when they paid you millions of dollars, what exactly did you do? I mean, lawyers are expensive, and at $1,000 an hour, you'd have to do 1,000 hours of actual work to justify $1 million. What in the world did you do to justify $8 million? Here's the way the report concludes. The Biden family used proceeds from these business activities to buy hundreds of thousands of dollars to Joe Biden. So this report actually tags Biden directly. The report also says it included thousands of dollars that are directly traceable to China. Now, you could say, well, this is just politics. Let me tell you where it really comes home for Americans, and that is, if Joe Biden is compromised by communist China, what has he done as president of the United States that would indicate he's compromised by communist China? Joe Biden's entire policy on energy, which when you consider what energy is to the United States, it's a multi-trillion dollar decision. When you say we're going to ignore the resources that God has blessed America with, coal, oil, natural gas, and nuclear, and you say we're not going to use any of that, we're going to tie America's energy future to windmills made in China, batteries made in China, and solar panels made in China. That's what you get with a president who's owned lock, stock, and barrel by Beijing. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest
Network. The Lars Larson Show. Before you are, weeding out the right from the wrong. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Monday, and if the Democrats were actually an honest political group, they would at their convention mention the fact that one of their major efforts to try to allow women to be pushed out of athletic competition, despite the effects of Title IX, has now had a major problem put into it, because the U.S. Supreme Court said no to the Biden administration when they made an emergency request to allow some of their policies on Title IX, in particular policies that would have said men who claim to be women are allowed to compete against women and in too many cases actually beat them. And I thought that was wrong, and I'm glad to see the Supreme Court come to that decision. It doesn't settle the whole case. This is just telling them, no, you don't get an emergency order to put this into effect. And so to talk about the legal end of this, Sarah Parshall Perry joins me now, a legal fellow at the Meese Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at Heritage. Sarah, it's good to have you back on the program. Did I get any of that wrong?
No, you did a great job summarizing it. In fact, these were appeals that were coming out of the Fifth and Sixth Circuits, both of whom had decided that they were going to uphold the injunction against the entirety of that law in those circuits. And in fact, what happened on the way to the Supreme Court was that, just as you said, the Biden administration said, okay, we will submit to an injunction on the part of the rule that identifies sex as including sexual orientation and gender identity, but give us at least the rest of our rule, the definition of, for example, hostile environment for sex harassment purposes, or, for example, compelled speech, what we allow as a hostile environment if you make someone's pronouns optional as opposed to mandatory. And what the majority of the justices seemed to feel was that you can't exactly separate a statute based on sex discrimination, different parts that relate to sex discrimination. You can take the definition of sex as gender identity, you can separate it out, it still touches every other aspect of a law based on sex discrimination. The only one, by the way, in our civil rights canon that deals only with sex as a discriminating choice. So we're seeing, I think, very good things, but at the same time, almost commensurate with that per curiam order that was issued on Friday, two state laws are now on appeal to the Supreme Court. One is coming out of West Virginia, their Fairness in Women's Sports Act, and one coming out of Idaho in the Hecox versus Little case. That one is on Idaho's Fairness in Women's Sports Act. So they're going to be forced to reckon with, one way or the other, the notion of sex separated distinctions in education and in athletics. And if it's not within the Title IX concept, it's going to definitely be within the state's rights concept.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Why do I get the impression the Biden administration was anxious to pry some kind of win out of this? And they thought, well, if we just ask for a piece of it, we can get them to give us an emergency order. We'll get the camel's nose under the tent and we'll get a piece of it in place, even if the rest of it isn't. And they lost on that one. Why were they so anxious to push this through? I mean, I'm not a lawyer, but you say, give us an emergency order because we'll get a piece of a victory. And they didn't even get that.
No, but I find it very interesting that this is happening in an election year, right? So this was an appeal that was filed, an emergency request for a stay of injunction. And of course, it's an election year. That appeal was filed before Joe Biden had withdrawn himself from political contention. So this was a very pointed, particularly political choice. That's a lot of P's, by the way. But it was a choice that he made, I believe, in order to sort of boon his political bona fides when it comes to his hard left progressive base, specifically on issues like gender identity and transgender rights, which he, by the way, has called the civil rights issue of our era. Now, I think that does a disservice to the gains of the African Americans who fought so hard for civil rights in the 1960s. But we're seeing somebody who has failed to back off, who has failed to listen to common sense, who has failed to even listen to the numbers. 72% of Americans want sex-separated sports. We saw that playing out on the world stage in Olympic boxing contest. But this is a man who refuses not only to listen to common sense, he refuses to listen to political polling, which to my mind is even more significant.
I mean, that's the part that hammers me, because Sarah, when I saw the video of that man, and I realize neither one of these people is from the United States, but still, you're watching in the United States and you see a man, an Algerian man, punch an actual biological woman in the face, knock her to the canvas, and knock her right out of the competition. And you realize, even if you don't watch the Olympics, and I don't watch most of the Olympics, you realize this is a young lady who trained for years to get to that level of competition, and a man with XY chromosomes, you know, just knocks her to the canvas and pushes her out of the competition altogether simply because of this nonsense of saying biological men, and he is a biological man, can compete against women. That isn't a good look for the Democrat Party if they care about what's going on during an election year, is it?
No, it's really not. But again, you and I've talked about this, and we hear nothing but crickets from the old guard feminists on issues like this. I mean, we haven't had the vote more than 100 years. We've had it exactly 101 years, and we've only had the benefit of Title IX and educational equality for 52 years. These are very young victories, and suddenly it seems as though the left-wing party has decided that they're willing to forego certain segments of the Democratic base in order to cater to a small, vocal, and well-funded minority at the risk of otherwise being called a transphobe. Well, I have news for you. We are in the era of discourse where name-calling is going to be very common, and if we are getting called the nasty names, that's a pretty good indication we are probably doing something right. My mind, I will probably not be satisfied with anything I see from the Supreme Court until they once and for all strike down the final rule so that we have total and complete equanimity across the country. Right now, we've got a state of literally a nation divided. 26 states are now under an injunction. They are shielded from the rule right before the beginning of the school year. 24 states are not. That's an untenable situation. It can't continue, particularly as all of these families ready for school.
And think about this, Sarah. Think about at the ground level on this one. So you've got states which in some cases end up, you know, athletes from that state compete against athletes from another state in, you know, more national competitions. And you say, you mean we're going to have some biological males who identify as women who are allowed to compete? What happens when they meet up with a team that is holding to the old argument that or the old rule that women are women and men are men and they don't compete with each other in these competitions? And when you say untenable, it's impossible, isn't it? Because they show up for boxing or swimming or track and field, and you say, well, hold on, whose rules apply? The rules from the 24 states or the rules from the 26 states?
That's exactly why the Supreme Court has ultimately got to weigh in, and honestly, they can't do it soon enough. This was simply a procedural disposition. I think it's a good sign of things to come. And here's what all the justices did agree on. They all agreed that the plaintiff states were entitled to preliminary relief. That is a great sign. They recognize exactly how significant and how wide-sweeping this rule is. In fact, they all said it cannot be seen that the Biden administration will succeed on the merits in ultimate dispositions. That's a great sign. If we've got the Supreme Court saying you're not going to win, and so we're issuing the injunction and refusing to stay now, that I think is a hopeful sign for the future.
I think you're absolutely right. That's Sarah Parshall Perry. She's at the Mies Center for Legal and Judicial Studies at Heritage. I'm glad to take naysayers on that one. If you think that your daughter, your actual biological daughter, should have to compete in sports against a biological male and her scholarship may be hanging on it, I'd love to hear the person who's in favor of that.
Whenever you want it. Get the podcasts all day, every day at LarsLarson.com.
Welcome back to the program. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Monday. Democrats meeting in Chicago. Meanwhile, here in the Pacific Northwest, I want you to consider this. Ask this question. Should one of the biggest new bridges in the Northwest, as men built yet, they're going to start in about 2 years, Should that bridge cost $45 million more than it has to just to make it look cool? And I guess that's the only way I found to describe how this is. The committee that is charged with designing a brand new Burnside Bridge, this is for Portlandia, has recommended an unusual look, aiming for a bold structure that would differentiate it from other Portland spans. So in other words, they're not just going to build a bridge that is a functional, strong bridge designed to carry pedestrians and cars. They want one that looks good. They want a bold look. And in fact, there's one woman on the committee, Sharon Wood Wortman, who says a $900 million bridge ought to look like no other in the entire history of bridge building. Well, they didn't even get that. They voted 14 to 2 for what is called the inverted Y cable stay. There are already at least a few bridges out there. There's one in Boston in particular that looks just like this bridge. So they didn't even get to that. But they said, we're going to use this design. It is $45 million more expensive than other proposed designs, but it looks cool. And then I love this optimism. Committee members said the bridge's concrete design will make removing graffiti more straightforward. In other words, you're building a brand spanking new bridge that's going to come in at just short of $1 billion. And you say, but we're building it so it'll be easy to wash off, get rid of the graffiti that we know is going to cover its surface. You're building it with the taxpayers' money, and you're telling the taxpayers, we already know it's going to get tagged up by a bunch of idiots with spray cans, but it'll be easier to remove that stuff, and it's going to look cool. You know what? As far as I'm concerned, the fact that the powers that be in both Oregon and Washington, Portland and Seattle, have decided to allow such destruction of downtowns, drive down a road, drive down a freeway, you look at all that money that was spent on landscaping, on fancy architecture, and then you see the kind of damage that the cities and the counties and the state have allowed. I would just say, if we bought you that expensive stuff and that's the way you took care of it, then from this point forward, you get nothing nice anymore. You want to build a bridge, you build a plain utilitarian bridge that does the job for the people who paid for it. You don't get fancy just because somebody else is paying the tab. That would be my approach to it. This segment of the show brought to you by NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showings, no hassles, and you pick the closing date. NickShivers.com for details. Let's go to David. David, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Yeah, my question, Lars, is you're talking about Joe Biden, Hunter Biden, and the offshore S accounts and the $35 million. Well, what about Nancy Pelosi and her husband? And she was caught insider trading, stating that her husband made the trades when she is voting on the bill to approve that bill, and they made millions off of that. Why isn't Nancy Pelosi and her husband in jail, and who does she think she is to endorse anybody on the DMC when we already know what she is?
The simple answer is because what Joe Biden and his family did is illegal, and what Nancy Pelosi and her husband did is not yet illegal. It should be illegal. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, if the Congress was actually listening to the public, they'd say, we're going to make a law that says that once you take office in Congress, House or Senate, you're not allowed to trade stocks at all, and nor are members of your immediate family. And if you do, you will be prosecuted. They have not done that. They have put some limits on it, but not nearly enough. And as you point out, Nancy Pelosi regularly says, I don't trade stocks. That's my husband. So it's my husband's stock trading. Fact is, in the state of California, California is what's called a community property state, which means if her husband takes on a debt, she has that debt as much as he did. If he buys a stock, she owns half of it. He owns half of it. She can't escape by simply saying, oh, that's my husband's activity. And as far as I'm concerned, I would love to start asking everybody running for the U.S. Congress, Democrat or Republican, if you're in office, should we have a law that says that members of Congress and their immediate families are forbidden to trade stocks? And if you have people saying, well, but then some people won't run for Congress because they want to still trade stocks, fine, then they don't run. But you, just like when you go into the military, there are requirements on you while you're in. There are requirements on you when you leave. If you work in law enforcement, if you work in a number of professions, there are things you're not allowed to do that other people in other private sector jobs are allowed to do. If you decide to run for Congress, you can't trade stocks, and neither can your members or your family.
And I think, I still don't, I believe that she has any credibility being a DMC to endorse anybody in a DMC running
well, except
for
you're not a Democrat, and neither am I.
Else.
The Democrats
no,
look at
I'm
her,
not, but...
and they think she's great.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's a whole bunch of them that think they're great, but us Republicans, we look at them as face value is what they are.
Well, I hope we
double
decide that we'll be just as tough.
Yards.
I want to be just as tough on our side. When Clarence Thomas takes multi-million dollar favors, he's always been a favorite for me legally and on the court decisions. But it, when it comes to taking favors, you ought to disclose those. And if you don't disclose them, they ought to have a consequence.
The Lars Larson.
In exactly 15 seconds, we'll be on the air.
Is the Lars Larson Show.
With great humility, I am asking you to be excited.
Honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
I may be a white boy, but I'm not stupid.
Broadcasting across the Pacific Northwest and covering Oregon, Washington, and Idaho on the Radio Northwest Network.
Lars.
And now.
And then we're going to kick the Biden crime family out of the White House.
Here's your host.
My memory is so bad, I let you speak.
Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Monday. The Democrats are meeting in Chicago. Planned Parenthood is giving away free abortion pills and vasectomies. And I have to say, our ex-poll question today is, if we gave free vasectomies to every Democrat in America, would that necessarily be a bad thing? And I have to say, no, not necessarily. Keep them from reproducing. That works for me. But on that note, I want to bring on our friend Ari Hoffman, host of the Ari Hoffman Show on our Seattle affiliate, and that's KVI. Ari, welcome to the program.
Great to be here, buddy.
I understand you stepped out of another event. Do you want to mention that other event or not?
Oh, yeah. Sure. My niece is getting married today, so I stepped out right after we finished the big family picture. So you have great timing in calling me now.
So have they stomped on the glass yet or anything?
No, they haven't done that. We do all the pictures beforehand, and then we do all that, and we have a few L'chaims.
Okay. Hey, I got to... Before we get into this subject about McNeil Island and the sex offenders that the state of Washington apparently sees fit to make it an easier path for them to get from captivity to out among the public, which seems like a bad idea, I want to mention something else that I literally just learned. Adam Andrzejewski, you know him, right?
Mm-hmm, sure.
He passed away over the weekend.
I didn't know that. Everybody was talking about Phil Donahue. They didn't mention that one at all.
No, I literally just had, just to tell everybody else, openthebooks.com, Adam championed this. Now, he's been involved in politics in a number of ways, but he decided to champion the idea of getting public information that is available from the government, but you got to kind of sort through it and figure out what it means. He did that through Open the Books, and he's a young guy. And then, Donovan Sargent, my executive producer, just got in my ear and said, hey, Adam Andrzejewski just died. I mean, I consider that a gigantic loss because he was one of the guys not looking to run for office he had before, but just saying, I want to get information out to the public so they know what the government is doing and how they're spending your money. And I don't have any details about how or why he died, but he's a young guy and he died over the weekend.
That's like the story we're about to talk about with McNeil Island. I mean, if it wasn't people who are pioneers like him, then I wouldn't be able to get the information I did from the Department of Corrections about them releasing these sex offenders into different neighborhoods. But that's a huge, huge loss.
Okay, so tell me this. Let's go to McNeil Island, and I'll talk more about Adam later. But this was literally in the last couple of minutes I found this out. Why in the world is the state of Washington trying to make it easier to say, we've already got this sexual predator, a violent sexual predator. We've already given him his trial. He's been convicted. We sent him off to McNeil Island, and now they seem to be looking for new and inventive ways to turn them loose?
Right. So what people need to understand is McNeil Island is like our very own Alcatraz in the Pacific Northwest. It used to be a very, very big prison. Now it's mainly for sex offenders. And the Democrats, we know they're big into defund the police. They're big into abolishing the police. But the other thing is they want to abolish the entire justice system. They think the entire thing is racist or unfair, and they don't think anybody should be in jail. So a couple of years ago, Washington State Democrats, with the help of Jay Inslee and Bob Ferguson, who's now running for governor, had the bright idea, hey, let's depopulate McNeil Island. So what they've been doing is they've been releasing level 3 sex offenders who are rated the worst of the worst by the FBI, their language, not mine, the most likely to reoffend, into unsuspecting communities. And when I finally got a list of some of these locations, the Department of Corrections got mad at me and accused me of doxing the sex offenders by letting people know where they were.
Well, now, hold on. Isn't the whole idea of mandatory registration for sex offenders, which I think every state in America does, the whole idea is to let the law-abiding, non-pervert, non-predator population know when there's a sex offender in the neighborhood? Why would they object to that?
Well, you would think that would be normal, but let's not forget Jay Inslee, in his last budget that he signed, vetoed a line item that would have allowed for just that. Hey, tell everybody that they're coming to these communities. He vetoed it because he thinks everybody should share the wealth, and he knows that if a community finds out that one of these guys are coming to their community and is being placed there by the state, they will freak out. But you know something interesting? Jay Inslee lives on Bainbridge Island. None of these facilities are on Bainbridge Island. I say, if you guys want to do this, then you should have to live next door to the person.
I like that idea as well, because the other stat that stands out is that of the people they set free since the new policy went in, 1 in 4 has been arrested for new crimes that we know of. And I always want to add that we know of, because it may be that it's 2 in 4 or 3 in 4, but we know that 1 in 4 has been arrested for a new crime, and 1 in 7 is arrested for a new serious or violent crime. That's not a great track record.
It's really not. And like you said, that we know of. Literally 2 weeks ago, one of these guys was arrested for reoffending with children. And this was something that anybody could have seen coming. Everybody knew this guy was a danger, and they released him. And he flunked all his psych evaluations, and they still released this guy. This is something the Democrats have been doing for a while now. And what's crazy to me is the Seattle Times just covered it this week. I've been covering this story for 2 years. You've had representatives in the Washington State Legislature like Travis Couture fighting this for years. Now the Seattle Times does it, and when the Seattle Times does it, they didn't. It was the Democrats who turned them loose, and it was Bob Ferguson who executed the plan, and that Jay Inslee vetoed the line item that would inform people where it was. It was like, oh, they're mysteriously being released. Well, who's responsible for this? And the Seattle Times wrote thousands of words in this article and never once mentioned whose idea this was.
And by the way, when it comes to this, since it's been going on for years, the state lawmakers know this is happening. And if they know it's happening, the governor has a certain amount of executive authority, but the legislature, anytime they want, could say, we're going to pass a law that says you will not be just releasing lots and lots of these people, or you'll have to jump through a set of criteria before you cut them loose. Is there any sign the legislature is going to act on this?
The Republicans tried, the Democrats shot it down. And here's the crazy thing, Lars. They claim they're being released to these low, less restrictive alternatives is what they call them. But they're basically halfway houses. They have no fencing. They have no security. They have no cameras. And the last guy they released in an area here in Seattle, in the Seattle area, this guy, they found a shiv under his bed. This is the kind of people that they're releasing, most likely to reoffend, and trying to hide it from all of us.
Okay, so what do we do about it at this point? I mean, other than alerting the public, there's got to be some way to keep these guys locked up. And when people say, you mean forever? Yeah, with some of them, the sexually violent predators, I think the only thing you can do is confine them and keep them from being among the public.
Exactly, unless we take the measures that other states have taken and castrate the guys. But the other thing we can do is make sure that Bob Ferguson doesn't get elected. Because if Bob Ferguson gets elected, it's going to be even more than this. And something else, with regard to the person you mentioned earlier who passed away, we have this issue here where Bob Ferguson, anytime I do a public disclosure request from his office, the entire thing is redacted. Complete redacted, because they don't want anybody seeing what Bob Ferguson is actually up to. So if Bob Ferguson becomes governor, the one good thing I can say about Inslee's office is at least I get those documents back. It takes forever, but at least I get them back. With Ferguson, all they are is redacted. You're never going to know where these guys live.
Well, and imagine this, because Ari's right. Ari Hoffman, his show on KVIR, Seattle affiliate, follows mine. But if you're proud of what you do and you think you're doing the right thing, you shouldn't mind releasing the information to the public. It's only when you're ashamed of what you do. Ari, thanks very much. I appreciate the time. Back in a moment, and we'll get to your calls at 866-HEY-LARS. As we consider a Kamala Harris presidential campaign, I want to go back over some of the real numbers from her work as a border czar. That's next. With those hot...
To all the wokey snowflakes, yes, you are probably going to be offended. This is the Lars Larson Show.
You haven't been to the border.
And I haven't been to Europe. And I don't understand the point that you're making.
Yeah, that's Kamala Harris some time ago after she had been named border czar. And I understand most of the mainstream media right now is saying she was never border czar. I mean, forget about all those news reports you saw, all those things you read online or maybe even in the daily newspaper. No, she was never border czar. That's all just your imagination. But when she was asked in that soundbite, and I'll give full credit to Lester Holt of NBC News, and he said, you haven't been to the border. She says, I haven't been to Europe either. I'm not sure what the point is that you're making. She was made the border czar by Joe Biden. He did it early on in his time as president in 2021. And why did he hand off that job to her? Because he didn't want to do anything about it. In fact, he had done a lot of things to create the problem that we've got on America's southern border. So now that she is the choice of the Democrat Party, they'll actually make that official this week at the Democrat Party convention. Let me mention where we are, how we got there, and about Kamala Harris's role in all of this. Because as a border czar, she was absolutely pathetic. So as Kamala approaches her coronation as the unelected nominee of the Democrat Party running for president, she has eclipsed another milestone. 10 million illegal crossings of America's border while she served as border czar. 10 million. Now, do we know for a fact how many illegal aliens are in America? We only have some rough estimates because nobody knows. Not Customs and Border Protection, not ICE, certainly not Immigration Services. We don't know. There may be anywhere from 12 to 15 million or more illegal aliens in this country. Now, here's what we know about what's happened recently, but let me get into that in a moment. First, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to have you with me. If you want to jump into what we call the best conversation in talk journalism, it's always easy, and we're always glad to have you call at 866-HEY-LARS. And if you're a naysayer and you disagree with my point of view, that's not only acceptable, we honor naysayers. You want to call in and say, it's great that we've got 10 or 12 or 15 million extra illegal aliens. I'd be glad to hear the argument. Just stick around for a couple of questions. I'd like to ask a few, as the lawyers say, in aid of an objection. But consider this. Customs and Border Protection shows that just in the month of July, last month, the most recent numbers, 104,000 illegal aliens were encountered directly by Customs and Border Protection. For 39 months, during which time Kamala Harris was border czar, monthly encounters between CBP and illegal aliens were higher. All of them were higher than even the highest month under the Trump administration. Now, one of the answers I've heard people give is, well, you know, illegal aliens, that was worse under Trump than under Joe Biden and Kamala Harris. Well, if Customs and Border Protection say we have now topped 10 million in the last 3.5 years, you're telling me that more than that number came in during Donald Trump's 4 years in office? Because I find that a little hard to believe, because somehow the mainstream media, which would have loved to have bashed Donald Trump, we're going to say, hey, Donald Trump is letting a lot of illegal aliens in, and yet he says he's in favor of controlling that problem. If that had been true, if there were more illegals crossing during Trump, the mainstream media definitely would have told you. In this case, we know that the numbers under Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have been much higher. I want to take a, my naysayer call because I love naysayer calls. Linda, we all love naysayers. Welcome to the program. What do you and I disagree about that makes you a naysayer today?
Lars, I just want to ask you just one simple question.
Sure.
How can you support Trump when he's gotten so crazy that he's saying that Kamala's crowds are just generated by artificial intelligence, and there was nobody really there?
That's the biggest issue on your... Well, I can tell you how. I believe that the Democrats have been playing games with the images they present. Can I give you Friday as a specific example?
Wait a minute. There'd be a local reporter there that would see the crowd, and they'd report it.
And I was going to just cite that exactly, Linda.
Yes.
On Friday, Kamala Harris was having an event. If you watch the mainstream media, you saw the current vice president, the Democrat Party's nominee, apparently, and behind her appeared to be this huge crowd of people. And somebody who was a local reporter stepped into the room. It was a room about the size of a high school basketball gymnasium. And at one end, they had a set of bleachers that might have held...
Who gave you this information?
I was looking at the pictures of what happened that day. There was a picture of what people saw.
And besides, he's obsessed with crowd size.
Hold on, I'm trying to answer your first objection. Well, Linda, let me ask you something. Is it appropriate if you say, I've got a friend who's running for, say, governor. You say, well, has he had any rallies? Yeah, he just had a rally and 10,000 people showed up. You say, well, that's pretty impressive.
Hold on,
Linda. I'm answering your question. And you say,
But local reporters have said, yes, there was 10,000 people there. And Trump has said, there was no one at the airport, and that was all AL.
Linda, I've done
How
crowd
can you
estimates.
Support that?
Because I've done
How can
crowd
you support
estimates.
That?
I'm trying to answer your question, but you appear to be a loudmouth who doesn't want to hear me answer the question. Do you want me to answer or not? Do you want to?
I don't want to hear lies.
Okay. You know what, Linda? I can tell. Linda's the kind of person who will ask you a question expecting that you won't have an answer. And then when you do, she just talks over you and says, no, I don't want to hear the answer. I understand. You're a member of the Democrat Party. If you actually heard real information, it would probably be very disturbing to you. But, Linda, the fact is, last Friday, they engineered a setting. It's like what a Hollywood director would do if he said, I need a giant crowd scene, but I only have 100 people. So we're going to put those 100 people in, and then we're going to shoot from different camera angles to make it look as though there are 10,000 people there. Hollywood does it all the time. Advertising people do it all the time. Kamala Harris's campaign has been doing it all the time as well. But Linda, if you want to maintain the illusion, I'm sure it makes you much more comfortable to vote for Kamala Harris. And if the biggest issue is what the crowd size is, whether Donald Trump can legitimately go to, say, an arena and draw 30,000 people, or in the case of New Jersey, 100,000 people, and Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have a tough time drawing a crowd big enough to fill a church, well, it tells us something about the candidate. So, Linda, I gave you a straight-ahead answer. Let's go to David. David, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Hey, Lars, thanks for having me. I just had a question. What's the likelihood of, during this upcoming Democratic National Convention, of them officially electing somebody else other than Kamala Harris?
Pretty close to zero, David. It probably isn't all the way to zero, but it's so close to zero that you couldn't tell the difference. They have this thing wired tight, David. The Democrat Party officials who made this happen are not going to let those delegates nominate anybody but Kamala Harris. So it's very, very close to zero. I mean, for you and me, it's effectively, they're at zero. They've chosen Kamala. The party leadership and the party elites have decided for the people. And David, if somebody is a Democrat, they have to take that seriously. You mean the Democrat Party calls itself Democratic and then doesn't pay a damn bit of attention to what the people actually have to say? Tells you a lot about the DNC. David, thanks for the call. You got the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show. voice of the people. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. So Kamala Harris has started to roll out some of her economic plans. And the interesting thing is her own party seems to accept the idea that she's not going to sit down for interviews. She's not going to answer a lot of detailed questions about exactly how is all of this going to work. In fact, I watched her talking to a couple of reporters this morning who managed to peg her for questions. And they said, well, how's this going to work? And she launched into this long explanation of saying, well, if you pay more for kids while they're in early education today, it will have a benefit. Well, maybe it will 20 years from now. But what's it going to do to us in the meantime? And you get this comment from this morning on ABC News Live. Kavian Shroof, I think is the way you say his name. He's one of the Democrats who's part of the Harris campaign. Vice President Harris has been incredibly brave to roll out an ambitious economic agenda. The more details you share, the more your policies are going to get picked apart. But she's saying, I trust the American people. I trust the journalists to explain these policies and our values. I think when that happens, it'll be successful for the Democrats. In other words, I'm not going to give you an explanation. You're going to have to make it up on your own, or at least that's the way I read it. Akash Choglu joins me now, who's Vice President of Americans for Prosperity. Akash, welcome back to the program.
Good to be with you, Lars. Thanks for having me back on.
I mean, it's a pleasure to have you on, but in my experience, if you've got a politician who really thinks, male or female, that his idea is a great idea, he'd be glad to, you know, do a deep dive and tell you all the details and all the ins and outs of how it's going to work. Kamala Harris just says, I'm going to do some stuff and you guys figure out the details. She didn't want to talk about those details. Shouldn't Americans be a bit suspicious of that?
They absolutely should. What they're trying to do is run a campaign on identity and frankly, positive vibes and just the momentum of her not being Joe Biden. But that's obviously insufficient, right? The American people deserve answers to these questions. And I think what you heard from that surrogate on that television interview with ABC is that he's going to rely and the campaign's going to rely on the media to do it for them. That's simply unfair. I think it's high time she sits down for an interview where she's actually challenged on her policy positions today, how they differ from President Biden, how they differ from things she said as a presidential candidate, as a senator, and so on.
Well, I mean, for example, if I had an interview with her, last week she rolled out price controls. And I thought, well, centrally planned economies like the former Soviet Union or Cuba or Venezuela, that's worked out to be literally deadly for a lot of people. Nixon and his team figured out it was a bad idea about 50 years ago when they had wage and price controls. I would want to ask her, so who is it exactly that's going to decide the grocery store is charging too much for bread or a pound of ground round, since those are two of the examples used by Kamala Harris? Is it going to be somebody, some government bureaucrat that was never elected and isn't accountable to the public, who's going to simply reach out and say, your grocery store charges too much for bread, we are ordering them unilaterally to lower the cost of bread? How is this going to work? She hasn't explained any of that, and we're all supposed to figure it out on our own?
Yeah, I mean, it's completely unworkable. That idea, as you mentioned, has been failed every single time it's ever been tried in the United States, in socialist countries, in communist countries. It's why there are bread lines in Cuba and Venezuela, right? Because government imposes price controls and production declines and prices skyrocket. I mean, the American people know the history of these issues. But what that proves to you is that they are just grasping at straws for ideas that have long been debunked, right? She needs a one-line tagline about how they're going to lower costs because it's her administration that raised costs in the first place with the trillions of dollars in additional spending that caused this inflation crisis. But again, I think the real responsibility now, Lars, is on conservatives, on Republicans to go out and explain why these are such terrible ideas and what her track record actually is. Folks may have heard Nikki Haley gave an interview on Fox News the other night, and I love the line that she used, which is to take Kamala Harris at her word. Take her at her word at the things she had said in the past, use those against her and explain why they're wrong to the American people. I think that's exactly what conservatives should be doing.
But isn't that the thing she's trying to avoid answering? Because she has famously, on a debate stage or a town hall stage, said, I am absolutely in favor of a ban on fracking. Not we should reduce fracking, but a ban on fracking. Is she in favor of that now? Nobody knows. Is she still in favor of the Green New Deal? Nobody knows. You know, so hers is going to be the nobody knows campaign where people just say, well, if she was in favor of that before and it turned out it worked out badly, then she's not in favor of it now. Nobody has the first clue as to what she stands for. And yet this week, the Democrats are going to expect all their party members around America to say she's the best. We don't know anything about her, but she's the best.
But here's the thing, Lars, and I think this is where it goes back. You take her at her word, the things she has said in the past. Unless she has said otherwise, she holds the same position that she held as a president, as President Biden does, right? She's part of the administration, so she is responsible for that track record. She holds the positions that she held as a presidential candidate, and she holds the positions of the legislation that she supported as a senator. We hold her at her word for those things until she says otherwise. And in the meantime, what conservatives do is go out and make the case on how they are going to make lives better for the American people, right? What is the opposite of Bidenomics? It is tax cuts, right? It's controlling spending. It's rolling back thousands of pages of regulation. It's standing up for American workers instead of just big labor unions. I mean, these are the kind of things conservatives have to go and demonstrate that they have answers for, because she is not doing so. And I think it gives us an enormous opportunity.
I'm talking to Akash Choghli, who's a vice president of Americans for Prosperity. I'm also seeing that the Democrats are holding their shindig behind a giant 8-foot metal fence that goes all the way around the venue where the DNC is being held. And already the mobs are starting to push on that fence. And I kind of wonder what's going to happen when they finally breach that barricade that the Democrats have put up to keep the far left end of their own party outside. It's bizarre.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. We're seeing hypocrisy sort of in every inch of the Democratic National Convention, not least of which is simply the fact that it's being held in Chicago to begin with, right, which is sort of the poster child for Democratic progressive governance. Crime is at decades high, right? Violent crime is at decades high. Poverty is high. Taxes are high. Out-migration is high. The schools are an absolute failure. The city is billions of dollars in debt because of, you know, pension promises made between government unions and city Democrats. Politicians. I mean, this is sort of the microcosm of what national scale Democratic full control leadership would be. And I think that's the kind of thing that the American people are seeing on display in Chicago. And they shouldn't kid themselves based on what they hear on stage.
Well, I'm with you on this. Let's hold her to her previous word. And if she wants to come out and say, hey, I'm not for that anymore, then you sit down and do an interview and tell us why you're not for it anymore. That's Akash Choghli, who's Vice President of Americans for Prosperity. Let's go to John, who's a naysayer. John, we love naysayers. What do you and I disagree about?
Good afternoon, Lars. I hope you're hearing me good.
I hear you 5x5.
Good, thank you. You can always tell radio people they make that check first. So, Lars, you know what? Trump is totally hung up and obsessed with crowd sizes. And shame on you. Shame on you for being a hypocrite with your last caller and complaining at her for not letting you talk. Because how many times have you dropped people and talked over the top of them?
When they get boring, I drop them.
Your telephone hybrid.
John, let me ask you something.
If you're talking over the top of me right now,
I am, because we're going to hit a break. If a candidate draws crowds in the tens of thousands and his competition draws maybe hundreds of people, doesn't that tell us about something about the public attitude toward both candidates?
Yes, and then Kamala has huge crowd sizes compared to Trump.
So
be honest and read
Where has she, as a sitting vice president,
your listeners are not always as dumb as you think they are.
All I'm asking is, John, where has she drawn these gigantic crowds? Put Kamala Harris in a venue the size of, say, the venues that Donald Trump uses, and see if she can draw 30,000 people, 50,000, or as I said, in New Jersey, 100,000 people. Kamala Harris, as a presidential candidate, didn't even get a single vote 4 years ago. Folks, you...
You can't... fix stupid.
Stupid is forever.
But you surely can vote them out. This is the Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's Monday. The Democrats are meeting in Chicago. The mob outside their convention, which is made up of extreme left-wing Democrats, but Democrats all the same, they're mad over Israel, Gaza, their support of terrorism, things like that. I want to mention the passing of a man. I was never a big fan of Phil Donahue, but he did what I do. He did it on television. I do it on radio. He was a daytime television host of the Phil Donahue Show for about 30 years. Well, he passed away over the weekend. He was 88 years of age. May he rest in peace. But I have to admit to you that when I heard of Phil Donahue's passing, I immediately thought of an exchange that he had with another person, a much bigger legend, and that is Milton Friedman, who passed away. And Friedman and Donahue had this exchange about 40 years ago. And it was absolutely amazing because it said so much about economics. And I want to share this with you because it's only a part of the soundbite. But the two of them were talking about politics, and they were talking about the economy and about Phil Donahue, who in this question that he asks of the late Milton Friedman, Phil Donahue having passed this past weekend at 88, is very clear that he's a bleeding heart liberal. But that's okay. Milton Friedman takes it for what it is. And then he answers the question, and he absolutely knocked Phil Donahue back on his heels. Take a listen to the exchange between the late Phil Donahue, who just passed away, and the late Milton Friedman.
Here's my question. When you see around the globe the maldistribution of wealth, the desperate plight of millions of people in underdeveloped countries, when you see so few haves and so many have-nots, when you see the greed and the concentration of power within, did you ever have a moment of doubt about capitalism and whether greed's a good idea to run on?
Well, first of all, tell me, is there some society you know that doesn't run on greed? You think Russia doesn't run on greed? You think China doesn't run on greed? What is greed? Of course, none of us are greedy. It's only the other fellow who's greedy. The world runs on individuals pursuing their separate interests. The great achievements of civilization have not come from government bureaus. Einstein didn't construct his theory under order from a bureaucrat. Henry Ford didn't revolutionize the automobile industry that way. In the only cases in which the masses have escaped from the kind of grinding poverty you're talking about, the only cases in recorded history are where they have had capitalism and largely free trade. If you want to know where the masses are worst off, it's exactly in the kinds of societies that depart from that. So that the record of history is absolutely crystal clear. That there is no alternative way so far discovered of improving the lot of the ordinary people that can hold a candle to the productive activities that are unleashed by a free enterprise system.
But it seems to reward not virtue as much as ability to manipulate the system.
And what does reward virtue? You think the a communist commissar rewards virtue? You think a Hitler rewards virtue? You think, excuse me, if you'll pardon me, do you think American presidents reward virtue? Do they choose their appointees on the basis of the virtue of the people appointed or on the basis of their political clout?
That was the late Milton Friedman talking to now the late Phil Donahue. And I thought Friedman was absolutely right, because Friedman's trying to get across to Donahue, who doesn't get it, that he thinks that there's some kind of namby-pamby society in which all the people in leadership make all the best choices for all of the average people out there. And that if you had that person, say a Fidel Castro, a communist, or Maduro, that these people would make good decisions. No, they line their own pockets, and they line them all day long and twice on Sunday. One of my favorite Russian culture teachers way back in the day, Dan Davey, used to talk about the fact that in the old Soviet Union, the term tovarish, which meant comrade, was a term that was supposed to be the great leveler, that the president of the country was tovarish this, and the plumber was tovarish that, comrade. They were all comrades. They were all equal. Well, I tell you something. Friedman was absolutely right. The Soviets, the commissars, the Politburo, they all lived in nice houses. They drove around in nice cars. They never had to worry about standing in a bread line. The average person, not so very much. So that's what he was trying to get across. And Donahue just insisted on believing, well, you know, somewhere there is this society that doesn't run on greed. But see, like what Friedman pointed out, Phil Donahue, for doing a talk show, made a very nice salary. I make a very nice salary, not as big as Donahue's was, but a very nice salary. And is that greedy? No, it's charging what the market will bear. And, you know, so in that exchange, and we've played it, I don't know how many times on this show, because it speaks volumes to what the left believes. You see, Kamala Harris and Joe Biden and other members of the Democrat Party, they believe that if only you gave most of your paycheck to the federal government, that the federal government would take that and give it to people based on what they need. And more importantly, with Kamala Harris lately, she says we have to have equality, but we also have to have equity. And some of us didn't start out with as much, so maybe we need a little extra help. In that, you should hear a very broad hint from the likes of Kamala Harris. She plans to take your money, and then she plans to look around and say, who is it that's more deserving of some of Joe or Jim or Sally's paycheck? Oh, I know. These people over here, they're more deserving. Joe and Jim and Sally, not so much. And then make your decision about who to vote for.
The Lars Larson.